Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. She came to Russia with romance in mind and ultimately turned a nation topsy-turvy. That's the read for you, as in Catherine, played by Ellie Fanning in Hulu's popular new historical satire. Executive producer Mallory Allen joins me next in an internet radio exclusive from Sydney, Australia. Also ahead, SoftBank makes a $100 million diversity move and curtains for the Astronomy Club. Hey everyone, I'm Simon Applebaum, simulcasting live from New York on Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, and TuneIn Radio, and presenting on the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. This just in, tomorrow will be televised. Brought to you by Audible.com, the leading provider of spoken audio entertainment information that will transform the way you hear the world. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Get 3 free books when you sign up for a 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/televised. More details later in the program. Good to have you with us a little later than normal on this Wednesday afternoon, 72 degrees at the top of the hour here in New York, and we're delighted you're with us for the program all about TV's current and future. One of the guests coming your way from across the globe, and you'll hear her shortly, and we'd like you to get involved with her interactively. How? Pick up the phone, dial in, and use this number, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number is good anywhere you're catching us across the country, around the globe, here on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and TuneIn Radio. And after 48 hours not in biz, our chat room is back in biz. That's Simon Apple 04 by name, and you can find it on our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. So if you're shy about using the phone, use the room, and we'll get your thoughts on the air ASAP. And while the phone is on the air, you can connect others by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon on your Blog Talk speaker or tune-in screen. Follow the instructions and other people can be live with you. Mallory McGowan from The Great, live with us from Australia after these news notes. SoftBank, one of the largest venture investment organizations worldwide, has started a $100 million opportunity growth fund. The goal? Take stakes in companies developed by entrepreneurs of color. SoftBank Chief Operating Officer Marcelo Corey will oversee the fund, together with TaskRabbit Chief Executive Stacey Brown Philpott and Pinnacle co-creator Paul Judge, both African-Americans. In interviews this morning on CNBC and elsewhere, Corey noted investment will be made in a number of industries and that the fund could increase beyond $100 million. And I'll have more to say about this fund and its possible impact for television near the end of today's program. Strike one for Blackish creator Kenya Barris' content deal with Netflix. Astronomy Club, the sketch comedy series Barris launched on Netflix this winter, is one season and off. 6 episodes were made and presented on Netflix. Barris' second series for the service, Black AF, began 2 months ago, and Intergalactic, a music series, and I believe it's also animated, is on the way. Now some quickies. PBS NewsHour will go primetime Friday with a Race Matters America in Crisis Hour. That'll be at 9 p.m. Eastern Time on many PBS stations. Fubo TV is running TasteMate television service as of today. And as of a few minutes ago, we learned that Roku is now putting on its Roku channel, Flashlight Independent Network America Today, formerly seen just in Puerto Rico, Miami, and New York. Now it's nationwide. And Quebec is set to resume TV production next Monday, becoming the second Canadian province to declare a restart. Manitoba was first earlier this week. And that is news notes for today. Back in 1960, a film came out that basically upended how moviegoers could see history, or a famous novel. It's Tom Jones. The film that made Albert Finney a worldwide star was a breakthrough for director Tony Richardson, won a ton of Oscars in that year, including Best Picture. And historical satire was never the same since. Quite irreverent. Well, here we are 60 years later, and now there is a television series which has that kind of Tom Jones flavor. This one taking place in the sphere of Russia. It's called The Great, named after Catherine the Great, played here by the popular actress Ellie Fanning, who a lot of critics believe this performance could be up for an Emmy Award very, very soon. It's getting rave reviews, and now joining us live from Sydney, Australia, where it's already Thursday morning, is executive producer Marion McGowan. Marion, top of the morning to you, and welcome in.
Indeed, Simon. Thank you very much.
You're very, very welcome. Thanks for taking time out on the Thursday to be with us. What are you hearing so far about how people are responding here to The Great, your show?
Well, it's been a wonderful response, actually. I mean, obviously you hope that once audience start to see the piece that you've been working on for all this time, that they will respond to it in the spirit of the original idea, and that's certainly the sense we're getting. Because I think one of the interesting things about developing this particular project was it has such a unique tone, and you put your finger on it. I mean, Tom Jones is a really interesting analogy. that the satirical element of it, the sort of tone in which it sits, just sort of on that cusp between comedy and pathos, was a difficult one to initially to persuade people on, because whilst they enjoyed reading the script, they couldn't imagine what it was going to be like. So it's been wonderful that people have understood that and more, better even, responded to it.
The creator of this series is an excellent writer by the name of Tony McNamara, who won an Oscar nomination a year or two ago for another film that had sort of the same historical panache as this series in Tom Jones, The Favorite. Was Tony inspired by Tom Jones to do both The Favorite and this series?
Interestingly enough, Tony got the gig on The Favorite by virtue of the original screenplay we had for The Great. The Great was, I first saw it, Tony wrote it as a play at the Sydney Theatre Company in some years ago now, and I optioned it at that point for as a feature film. So we developed it originally along those lines. I don't know that Tom Jones ever came up in our conversations. That's why I think it's such an interesting comparison. I'll have to go and look at it again. It's been a while. So we developed it as a screenplay, and that was what Yorgos Lanthimos read before he hired Tony to write The Favourite. So there's a nice symmetry there for both of us.
Yeah. The comparison, Marianne, came out of watching the clips from your series, in that the way Ellie and the rest of the cast play this, it's very satirical, it's very irreverent, it's very saucy. Catherine comes across as this, you know, I'm the witted person here. I may know more like Tom Jones than anybody else in Russia at that era, and I'm going to do what I got to do to make the country work.
Yes. I mean, she's an innocent, in a sense, at the beginning of our story, which is why she can have such confidence in her abilities to change things. And I think that's the other thing we were very keen to keep present in the audience's minds, is that she doesn't always get it right. You know, she's not a flawless hero in the same way as our antagonists aren't, you know, thoroughly bad. You know, the idea was to try and keep that sort of sense of ambiguity about character, which is the truth of our existence, of course. You know, none of us are entirely good and none of us are entirely bad. And some of us, we all make mistakes and we all succeed in different things. So trying to get that thing. Tom Jones is truthfully, that is a very, that character probably has a little more confidence than she does, however, from memory.
Mm-hmm.
Which is,
you mentioned a moment ago that this was based on first a play and then a screenplay. How long did it take to adapt this to a television series? And when you make that move from a play, which is a one-night deal, a screenplay, which is
yep.
a one-event deal, how do you broaden
yep.
out everything to make it a series?
Well, one of the interesting things is the original material, the play was a bifurcated story. So the first half of the play was the young Catherine up to the point at which she disposes of her husband. And the second half was 20 years later when she's dealing with the consequences of that decision. And one of the interesting things about turning it into a screenplay was we struggled with managing that bifurcation and allowing an audience to connect from one character to a much older character. So the joy of when we sort of suddenly the light struck us somewhat late in the way one thinks about it, that it would make a good television series, it liberated us to explore A, that particular problem. How do you know, you could go all the way through, so you could have you could tell the whole story. You could expand on all the characters that we introduced that were in the play, that were expanded in the screenplay, and that are considerably expanded in the television series. But one of the great joys of doing this series was all of those characters and all those wonderful actors we got to put in those roles, and all the sort of stories that they tell within and around, you know, Catherine and Peter. So that was one of the great joys. We realized that we had enough material to fill a series, and in fact to do greater justice to the idea and to the stories and to the themes.
Mm-hmm. We're talking about The Great. It's the new Hulu series about Catherine the Great, as played by Ellie Tang. Great cast also, including co-star Nicholas Holt. We'll talk about his role, by the way, in the series. They make a wonderful pair, Fanning and Holt. And we are speaking with Myra McGowan, the executive producer of the series. She is live with us from Sydney, Australia, where it already is Thursday this half hour. On tomorrow, we'll be televised. Simon Appleman, we'll be live from wherever you are. Good to have you with us. 72 degrees at the top of the hour. And wherever you are, we hope that your Wednesday is going great here on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, TuneIn Radio, and we're also carried on the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. If you have a question or comment for Marianne, ring it in, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. We have one more episode coming your way at our regular time, 3:10 Eastern, New Pacific, on Friday. We have two exciting attractions that we'll be showcasing, both of them available on your smart TV set or smart TV device. The first is a new Crackle movie, their first original movie in some time, called The Clearing. Think of it as an interesting spin on a zombie apocalypse near you. We'll have the writer-director David Madelon with us. And then, a pay-per-view went unlike any other. Think of it as pay-per-view for barbecue, specifically the first ever barbecue final club. We'll have the host and moderator from WGN Radio here in Chicago. We'll have Dane Neal will be with us. That's all Friday, 3:10 Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Marion, how did Ellie get to play the role of Catherine?
We looked very hard for this particular piece of casting because it's a tough role to play, and I think that's one of the great joys of Elle is that she actually makes it look so effortless, because the performance has to sit in, as a, you know, in a sense in that same place. It has to deliver on the comedy, so it has to be an actress or an actor who can manage the comedy and the satire of it, but at the same time, Tony's writing is always going to be about truth in character. So you're looking for, in a way, how we would approach the performances and the storytelling from a director point of view, etc., was that it's strictly speaking a narrative drama that has funny bits in it because the human condition is essentially funny. So Elle just has such a lightness of touch and such an untrammeled sort of approach to performance. So it's very truthful. And she and Nick are interesting, and Nicholas Holt in that, are very interesting because they're both child actors, so they've grown up in that world, and they both seem to have a very similar approach to performance, which is, once again, to find the truth in the character, the truth in the performance. So when we sent the script to her and she agreed to do it, and in fact, I think that was one of the interesting things. She and I and Tony all had a very clear sense of the story that we wanted to tell, the character that we were telling that story with, and we were all on the same page very quickly when it came to that. So it was just one of those joyful casting moments which can make or break a series.
Mm. One of the things about the series that comes through is the great byplay that Fanning has with her co-star, Nicholas Holt. How did you find Nicholas, and how quickly did the byplay happen? Because they sort of like tit-for-tat each other from episode to episode. It's sort of like this, you know, I'm going to get my way, and Nicholas said, no, you're not. I'm going to, you know, I'm the ruler here, and over my body. And, of course, Elliot's like going, okay, you said it, over your body.
Yes, Nicholas played a sort of supporting role in The Favourite, and that's where Tony met him. And I remember the minute he was in the rehearsal room on The Favourite, and he texted me and said, I found our Peter. And I think it was just one of those instant moments. In fact, he was the first character, the first actor that we attached to the series. I think you're absolutely right. That was one of the great revelations of the first couple of episodes when we were looking at the rushes and looking at the first early cuts, and we realized how much of the show centered on this sort of central story of the series, which is about a young girl who's really married the wrong man and has to work out how to kill him. And that sort of domestic banter, in a way, whilst it all has a sort of royal context and a political context, is truthfully really a domestic argument in a sense at its core. So that we discovered that quite sort of pretty early on, and we certainly adjusted the later episodes to put as much to keep that to the fore when we realized that the episodes really kind of came together most effectively when they were on screen together.
Mm-hmm. Talk about Tony McNamara and what his qualities are as a writer. I mean, The Favorite was, when it came out a year or two ago, caught everybody by surprise. A lot of people were really surprised by how many Oscar nominations it got. And I think it won like one or two, including one for, I believe, one of the stars, Alison Coleman, a brilliant actress, who was also in a little thing called The Night Manager several years ago. And it's like every performance she does
indeed.
Is
she
unique and great. What makes Tony work as a writer?
I've been working with Tony for about 30 years. I first met him when he was at the film school, the National Film School here in Sydney. And I optioned one of his very early plays called The Café Latte Kid, which we made into a film called The Rage in Placid Lake with Miranda Richardson and Claire Danes and Rose Byrne, amongst others, and Ben Lee. I always responded to his humour because he has that, he sits, as an Australian, he sort of sits between the sort of New York Jewish humour and the English play sort of classic sort of drawing room comedy. He sits between those two worlds, and he draws on both of those comedy traditions. And a lot of, obviously, starting off as a playwright and then moving into the screen, he's very dialogue-based. His screenplays have almost no big print in them. They're really just about dialogue. And the thing about the dialogue that is so clever is that it's extremely rhythmic. And one of the rules, absolute rules he has on set is that no one is allowed to change a single line or a single word. Not because he's sort of so precious about the word so much, is that it's critical to the scene and the way it plays. And as you've just pointed out, in a sense, the banter between Nick and Elle is the rhythm. The rhythm of the language, the rhythm of the emotions as it goes up and down from the beginning of the scene to the end of the scene, that's really the core of what he does. The other thing about him is he's extremely imaginative, in the sense of he's extremely open to a different way to dramatize an idea. You know, if you think about, and I don't know whether I should give out spoilers or not, but there are sequences in episode 6 with the dog, for instance. I mean, these are very imaginative ways of depicting character, and they're always character-based. He is always character-based. It's always going to be about the truth of the character, and that's what's going to pull you through the story. He's much less focused on plot. So he's really telling a story through character, through dialogue, and through the themes that are pulling those characters along.
Over the decades, Australia has produced not only great movies, but also a wonderful crop of terrific directors, people like Peter Weir, Peter Jackson, Gillian Armstrong, Baz Luhrmann, you just go on and on and on. Who do you get directing The Great? And was it very important for you to make sure that for this series, women had the chance to direct this as much as men?
Absolutely, absolutely. This is one of the most difficult sort of angst-ridden sort of decisions that you make. I mean, that's true of almost all of those critical roles and head of department and casting and all those sorts of things. They are sort of all angst-inducing to a degree. But directors was very important to us. We worked with five directors across the series. From the pilot through to episode 10. And we worked with a combination of women, men, Australians, English, Americans. We did a very, very broad search to find those people who could deliver that tone, who could deliver the performance, who understood what Tony and I were trying to do. And I think we did extremely well. So our first director was Matt Shackman, who did the pilot, who sort of runs the Geffen Theatre. Is that it's just artistic director of the Geffen Theatre in Los Angeles, amongst many other things. Our second block, we used Colin Buxey, who's an English director who's based in the US now, who's done everything from Fargo to Miami, the original Miami Vice. Then we worked with Ben Chester, who's an Australian director. who has been working in the UK for a while. We worked with an exciting young team of women called Bert and Bertie, sort of two women directors who work together, who are also based in the US. They've just done a film called Troop Zero, which was very successful at last year's Sundance. And then our final director was Geeta Patel, who's a US-based director as well, who did our final block. So we had a terrific range of sort of points of view and sort of experience, and all of whom we felt did really brought fantastic quality to the final episode.
We're speaking with Mary McGowan, the executive producer of The Great. It's the brand-new Hulu series that is winning a lot of raves all over the place, starring Ellie Fanning. And you can find it on smart TV sets and smart devices, part of your Hulu service. And I enjoy this live from Sydney, Australia, where it is already Thursday morning, their time right here, this half hour, on Tomorrow Televised. Tony Applebaum with you live from New York. If you have any questions or comments, or I'm in this with Marion, make the call go, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Coming Monday on Tomorrow Be Televised, we'll have one of the executive producers, Case Made TV, Jay Holter. We'll talk about the new deal they have with Fubo TV. We'll talk about how Case Made is doing on smart TV sets and smart devices, and we'll also preview their latest original series. That's coming up on Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Be Televised. And a week from Friday on the program, we will have the husband and wife team that's putting together one of Netflix's most unique series this year. It's called The Healing Power of Dude. It's a series that is a breakthrough for people with disabilities on camera and off. We will have Erica Spades and Sam Whitmer-Weisberg. That's all coming up next Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Be Televised. When you're trying to recreate Russia, where do you go in Australia or nearby to do that?
Honestly, Simon, you don't. You don't. You go to Europe, essentially. So we originally we were going to do it in Germany when we were doing it as a feature film. But when we set it up as a television series, we shot in the UK, Italy, and we did it primarily in a studio. So we built the vast number of the interiors in a studio in East London. And then we shot the series in Yorkshire and Leicestershire, which is sort of north of London. And we also shot in gardens around and about London. And then for the main exteriors of the palace, we went to a beautiful Baroque palace just about 40 minutes outside Naples in Italy called Caserta Regia, which was built in the 1700s by Charles V, which was where most of those exteriors and the big fountains and things like that were all shot there. Mm. Australia, unfortunately, is just not old enough to have any Baroque gardens or palaces.
That's great country. You can't do better than a palace to shoot a show like this.
Indeed, the land of palaces.
Oh, yes. Land of palaces and moats and all sorts of things in between. Mary, I understand you have your own production company as well as working on The Great. Do you have any TV projects coming up from your own house?
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, it's interesting because the way that television is going at the moment, it has really shifted the focus of the way the sort of bigger production companies, mine's a very small production company, but the bigger production companies that do television in Australia, they're much more focused now on finding sort of stories and ideas that we can shoot here that, you know, draw on our experiences and our stories in Australia. I mean, things like Big Little Lies, for instance, was originally an Australian book. But shot in the US, and there's many of those sorts of ideas, and we're developing a number of projects, including, you know, adaptations of a film that was very successful in Australia that we made at the end of last century, and that we're sort of looking at turning that into a television series. And obviously Tony and I are talking about developing an idea that we would also turn into a television series, because it's such a fantastic palette for television. You know, it just offers you so much time and space and breadth to tell stories of sort of more complexity or more, you know, longer narratives and all those sorts of ideas. And it's, having spent most of my time making feature films, this is, it's a wonderful liberation.
Before you go, Marion, what is Australian television like these days? I remember way back when, if in the United States was able to see television from your country, it was like one series at a time. There was Skippy the Bush Kangaroo for a couple of years. There was Paul Hogan with his variety show for a number of years in late night or prime time.
Yeah.
There was Danger Bay on the Disney Channel, which I believe was shot in Australia. There were other programs. I think at one point there was the remake of Mission Impossible with Peter Graves, who, by the way, had done a series, and maybe you don't know this, but Peter Graves did a series in Australia for a year between the time he did Fury and then the time he did Mission Impossible back in, like, the late 50s, early 60s. A lot of people don't know that, but
wow.
You can find that on YouTube.
I didn't know that either.
But I'm just curious, what is Australian television like these days?
Well, it's changing a great deal, as I sort of intimated in my earlier answer, in a sense, which because the streaming platforms, and we have one streaming platform here called Stan, which is where Hulu's, which is where The Great is showing in this country, and that offered us a great deal of, that offers another opportunity, another gateway to do things. Previously, we, you know, most of the free-to-air television was a sort of Neighbours or Home and Away, which are our sort of weekly, nightly soaps. And then there were the number of series like Flying Doctors, and we had a sort of whole range of these, most of which didn't really travel particularly well. But there are more series now that are travelling. Tony developed a series prior to this one called Doctor Doctor, which has got a different title, I believe, in the US and the UK, which screens on a number of channels outside of this country, for instance. So it's definitely changing, and it's sort of becoming, certainly is exploring, similar sorts of ideas are being explored in other parts of the world as well, such as supernatural or thrillers, a lot of true crime, you know, with that great stalwart of television. Doctor Doctor, of course, is a, you know, medical show, although one with a twist, of course, it being Tony McNamara. And, you know, there's a sort of that clock, but it's definitely shifting as it sort of tries to find a sort of broader audience rather than a sort of more parochial, which is what the soaps and the sort of McLeod's Daughters and the Flying Doctors and those sorts of series did. But, you know, it's a small population. We have sort of four or five free-to-air networks and a sort of couple of cable networks and one sort of streaming platform. But it's all, you know, our climate and our landscape is changing in the same way as it is in the rest of the world. So it'll be interesting to see how things will develop in the next 5 to 10 years.
Yeah. And is Hulu already talking to you and talking about a second season of The Great?
We are talking to them about a second season, yes. We don't have any confirmation yet.
All right, we will leave it there. The program is The Great, starring Elle Fanning, what might be an Emmy-nominated performance in a matter of months. And you can see The Great now on Hulu, available all over the place, on smart TV sets and smart TV devices, and on other places, too, all across the mundo. For more details about the program online, here's where you go, Hulu.com, HULU.com. That's The Great. Now in season one, playing on Hulu. Mary McGowan, executive producer on the series, thank you again very much for joining us live from Australia. Congratulations on getting the series off the ground. You, Tony, everybody else involved. And hopefully this season is the beginning of a great long run. And maybe some Emmy nominations coming your way pretty soon.
Thank you, Simon. Much appreciated.
Same here, Mary. Take care. Have a great rest of your week. All the greatest.
Okay. Bye.
Mary McGowan, executive producer of The Great, joining us live Thursday morning their time in Sydney, Australia. When we come back, we talk about this at the beginning of the program, this new fund from SoftBank. Could it have implications for TV entrepreneurs for color? A comment about that and more as we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. You're connected to the best internet radio on the planet, www.blogtalkradio, Spreaker, and TuneIn Radio, together reaching over 40 million listeners around the world every month and growing. And don't forget, TuneIn Radio is your home for the Coronavirus News Channel. Get up to date on what's going on with that virus all over the world, special report, plus podcasts and much more original material. The Coronavirus News Channel, 24/7, TuneIn Radio at TuneIn.com. Welcome back to Mark's Market Televised on this special Wednesday edition, 2 hours later than normal. Simon Applebaum with you live from Newhaven, New York. We're at 72 degrees at the top of the hour. And coming up in our first half hour, we start our news notes section with word about SoftBank and a very special new investment fund that is out to reach entrepreneurs of color. What's the possible TV impact of this? Not only for SoftBank, but maybe for the venture capitalists. Some thoughts about that first, after some words from the fine folks at Audible.com. If you're looking for a sequel to The Hunger Games, whether you've seen the movies or read the books, well, there is one for you, and you can hear it right now through Audible.com. It's Suzanne Collins' The Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes, and it's one of three audiobooks you can order right now through audibletrial.com/televised. Remember, Audible.com is the leading provider of spoken audio entertainment digitally given to you, information, and inspiration, too. Over 200,000 titles to choose from at any time, and you can listen to them on any device, including whatever you are hearing this on right now at Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, TuneIn Radio, and iHeartRadio. And all you got to do is sign up at audibletrial.com/televised. That's audibletrial.com/televised. You get three free audiobooks, a one-month trial, and great customer service from Audible's parent, namely Amazon.com. And by the way, two of those audiobooks you select come from the growing catalog of audio originals. We're talking about original audio productions of all shapes and sizes, the best of Broadway, off-Broadway, and regional theater, and great one-woman and one-man performances, all for you. So how are making this week, and maybe even today, the time that you find out how Audible.com can transform the way you hear the world? For that one-month trial, three free books to check out, it's audibletrial.com/trial. I think it's a great gift for you or someone you know in these pandemic times. So check it out, audibletrial.com/televised. And now, a comment. In our news notes section, in case you missed the first half hour, we kicked off with the news that SoftBank, one of the largest venture investment organizations around the world, has started a $100 million opportunity growth fund. They announced it this morning. And the goal is to take stakes, equity stakes, or investments, in companies developed by entrepreneurs of color. Now, the chief operating officer of SoftBank, Marcelo Cuore, will oversee the fund together with two minority entrepreneurs, TaskRabbit chief executive officer Stacey Brown-Philippot and Pindrop co-creator Paul Judge. Now, what's very interesting about SoftBank is that they're making an effort, obviously in response to the protests going on in light of what's been happening, the whole issue of racism and so forth, and they're trying to make something happen for entrepreneurs of color. And it got me thinking in a way I haven't done so in a long time. For many, many years, I not only followed television, but I followed the venture capital community. Venture capitalists spend billions of dollars every year. They make investments all over the place. Everything from healthcare, information technology, video game companies, cybersecurity, and they make a difference everywhere they go to. But when it comes to television, with very, very rare exceptions, venture capitalists, they have the attitude of not in my backyard, not in my sphere. Let someone else do it. And whenever I would go cover a venture capital conference, and I covered many over the last few decades, when I raised the topic in a panel session or privately with somebody, I said, hey, how about spending $1 billion on television? There's all sorts of opportunities you have. There are people of color, there are people all over the place, entrepreneurs, who want to launch new television ventures, content technology, new networks, new production companies, technology, look at what's going on. They would look at you like you were from the wrong planet. And then not only would they do that, but after they gave you the stare of like, what planet are you on, they would like make every excuse in the book, and a few I didn't even know, about why they would not invest in television. It's a hit biz, it's that biz, it doesn't pay off, it doesn't do this, it doesn't do that, Excuse, 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 excuse. And it became a broken record, no matter what VCs you went to or venture capitalists. And here's the interesting thing. When venture capitalists did invest in television, it turned out pretty, pretty good. Two examples, TV One, the cable network that Comcast ultimately got involved with Urban One, venture capitalists helped get that project off the ground. And also, there was a service called Classic Sports Network, now CBS Sports Network. That network got off the ground, and got on the road to being acquired by CBS, now Viacom CBS, because of venture capital. Some of it put in by various athletes. The SoftBank venture we talked about in our news notes page could be very, very important. Because the more you dive in to what's going on in television these days, you are seeing more and more ventures being put together by people of color. Individual television series, new programming services available on smart TV sets and smart devices, smart TV applications, production companies, projects to expand diversity on television, all sorts of technology involving ATSC 3.0, 5G television possibilities, high-definition television, interactive services, you name it. There are entrepreneurs of color who want to be in the game. And they would love to have some investment to back them up. What SoftBank announced today could send a message to venture capitalists, depending on what companies they invest in, that, you know what? TV investing is cool. TV investing is where it's at. And if SoftBank, one of the biggest outlets around, beyond, you know, with all the things they've done, including WeWork and Uber and so many other big tech companies and service companies, that if they invest in a television venture, hey, if SoftBank could do it, I could do it. Whether they're based in Silicon Valley, New York, along the Charles River in Boston, in North Carolina's Research Triangle, in Miami, in Texas, in Chicago, anywhere a venture capitalist can be found. So I'm going for SoftBank to at least make one of their initial investments in a television venture. The sense I got from hearing the interview that these three people did, say, on CNBC and elsewhere, was that they might be open to television. They might be open to TV entrepreneurs of color. You didn't get a sense that they're dismissing it out of hand, the way most VCs are. Let's intend they do that. Let's intend that one of their first investments is an entrepreneur of color who wants to play in television. That action could trigger many more actions on the part of the venture capital community at large. And that would be wonderful to see. And I have a hunch, if they get involved with television, more often than not, their investments will be winning ones. And now it's time for Up is an Update, where we update you on guests and topics about this program, this protocol about TV's current and future. We announced last week that we were going to have a guest from an AMC miniseries called Quiz. His name is James Graham. He is the writer and executive producer of the series. It's a three-part drama that's based on one of the most notorious game show scandals anywhere in the world, the Who Wants to Be a Millionaire cheating scandal that happened in Great Britain during the initial run of the series. The program is directed by the brilliant Stephen Frears, the man that did the Emmy-nominated series A Very English Scandal. He also did The Queen and other great stuff. And Graham, who is a playwright of big note in England, put this play together, put this effort together. AMC premiered the show this past Sunday. Now, we had hoped to have Graham on this program last Friday, and he was set to be one of our key guests. And unfortunately, we had heard from AMC that, because of whatever, we had to change things. So we did. We changed the time from last Friday to this past Monday. He was supposed to be with us on Monday's episode as our lead guest. And then we learned late Sunday night that because of current events or whatever, we had to change it again. So let me know that James Graham is still set to come on this program. AMC is committed that he come on. We've given them an additional date, and I'm hoping that either next week or the week after, James Graham will be on. We'll keep you posted. And I've seen clips of Quiz. By the way, Quiz episode 2 of 3 is on this Sunday night on AMC, and it's on at 10 p.m. Eastern Pacific time. For more details, amc.tv. That's amc.tv. Definitely check it out. It's definitely a show to know. And finally, I want to let you know about a wonderful set of events that's going on at the other place that I cover television for, that's Media Village, the Media Leadership website. In the last couple of weeks, Jack Myers and some of the other people at Media Village have set up these leadership conferences, these conversations with top people in the world of TV, advertising, and other media. I had a chance to cover one of them, featuring the executive producer of the Goldbergs and the new hit ABC series For Life, Doug Robinson. And many more are being scheduled for this month. And if you haven't checked them out, I hope you do. By the way, you can check in with questions and comments for the guests, and the show is a really great one. Next week, by the way, next Thursday, they're doing one on streaming and advanced television and smart TV set and smart TV device activity. So check it out at MediaVillage.com, www.MediaVillage.com. It's the Media Village Leadership Conversations. And by the way, if you hear those programs, you'll get a chance to donate to COVID-19 causes in New York and elsewhere. So check out the Leadership Conversations, more details, and the register for those upcoming in June and July, www.MediaVillage.com. Again, I want to thank Ryan McGowan, the executive producer of The Great, for being with us on today's program, live from Sydney, Australia, where it's already Thursday morning. We're still into Wednesday afternoon, coming up on Wednesday evening pretty soon. And thank all of you, of course, for tuning in. Remember, we've got another episode to wrap up this first week of June on Friday at our regular time, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific. Joining us will be from the new Crackle original movie, The Clearing, writer-director David Madelon, and from the new pay-per-view event, Barbecue Fite Club, host and moderator and personality of WGN Radio in Chicago, Dane Neal. If you came in late on today's program or you want to catch up on episodes you missed, go to our homepage, ASAP. It's www.blogtalkradio.com/televised. www.blogtalkradio.com/televised. And remember, you can also check out all of our episodes so far this year, 2020, on podcasts. Go to iTunes, Apple TV, the Speaker Podcast app, TuneIn.com, and iHeartRadio.com. If you go to the latter two places, go to the search bar, put Tomorrow We Tell Life in that bar, click, and you get our shows. And, of course, we love hearing from you. What do you think about our episode today about The Great? What do you think about the thoughts about venture capitalists getting involved in making new TV entrepreneurs of color happen sooner rather than later? And I'd love to get your thoughts about where TV's at and where it's going. That's the nature of our program. So remember, we love hearing from you. So email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. It's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Don't forget, we do respond to emails in 24 hours. You can also find me on social media, on Facebook at Simon Applebaum, and on Twitter at UBC Simon TWBT. That's UBC Simon TWBT. Remember, on Twitter, I often post news notes of what's going on in the TV field, and we also do wall-to-wall coverage of events like the Oscars, the Emmys, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So do check it out. Over 700 people do. That's UBC Simon TWBT. However you communicate with us, we communicate back. Why? It's our pleasure, and what you say matters now more than ever. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants, not only those of Blog Talk Radio and other distributors of this program. Our production associate is Mando Lin. Andy Toe is Blog Talk Radio's general manager, with Jay Sonnenberg, head of content. The co-founders of Blog Talk Radio, this very enterprise, are Alan Levy and Bob Cherish. Tomorrow We Tell Live is brought to you today by Audible.com and Amazon Division. Audible will transform the way you hear the world. For three free audiobooks and a one-month trial, it's audibletrial.com/televised. For Tomorrow We Tell Live, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for your listening. Have a great rest of your Wednesday. We're back in less than 48 hours or so at our regular time, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, you know where, Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, TuneIn Radio, and the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. Remember, whatever you're up to now and then, please make it safe, make it great. Please follow those guidelines, and let's lift this pandemic once and for all. Until the next time, stay well and stay tuned.